They tell me we made the calendar section of the Times Sunday. Saving Network TV. The people respond. The calendar letter page on April 14th, this is the Los Angeles Times, appealed in all semi-seriousness to the reader masses for fresh new ideas to help save network television. Turn all the other mics off. The generosity of readers has been ample and heartwarming. The least frivolous contributions are segregated in the box at the right. The rest follow. I hear the funny ones. Like there's one here, Miami Lice. Calendar babes, consider these. Miami Lice. They're new, they're now, they're wow. Hill Street Schmooze. But over to the right are the least frivolous ones. But seriously, folks, my ideas for a solution to the same old network TV problem. One, get rid of the morons who are now in charge of programming. Two, get rid of every writer who provides the same housewife-turned-hooker, molested child dope smuggling car chase story for every series. Three, don't allow a deodorant, kitty litter, toothpaste, light beer, toilet tissue, automobile, or cereal maker to sponsor anything. And there's one over here. They had one, two, three, four, five. That's a good number. Five serious suggestions. Network TV can be saved by adding a touch of class to it. On free TV, American viewers have three choices. Bimbo TV on the networks, Fuzzy Little Animals on PBS, Happy Whoopee on the Christian stations. A fourth category that has been overlooked and just might sell is scholarship. Series about the Great Pyramid, Stonehenge, United States of Manasseh, parallel Greek and Hebrew civilizations, and the Condotria Jubilee Connection are examples. The candidate for teacher for most of these series is that silver-haired PhD from Stanford, Gene Scott. That's from Robert A. Dahlquist, Orange, California. I think that's nice. So this is the university network. University means diversity and oneness. Diversity is what I talk about. The one who talks is me. 24 hours a day, and you just are getting a two-hour slice of it, Green Bay and Escanada. We're live, believe it or not. That telephone number that will go on the screen in a minute is there for you to talk to me through my phone line voices here. We don't know what we're going to do, so don't ask. We never know what we're going to do. I never wanted to be on TV, so 10 years ago something happened that put me on TV. So I didn't know what to do, didn't have any directors. So we did what we wanted to do. And been doing it ever since. Unstructured, unplanned, except I will not just have a one-way communication. I'm a frustrated, displaced teacher. Because you'll ask these questions, I'm going to tell you, then we don't have to talk about it anymore. I did a PhD at Stanford University, was heading for college university teaching and administration. Never quite got there. And I am tired of TV that looks down at you, talks down to you, treats people as though they have the mental ability of a 3-year-old lunatic. If they'd treat us like 3-year-old smart kids, it'd be an improvement. And I happen to believe that there are people across this nation that have a brain. And before I'm finished tonight, you'll find out whether you do or not. If you're still here 2 hours from now, you pass. Now come on over, musicians. Answer the phones at King's House 1. I'm going to do some teaching. Now, we may teach on everything from the pyramid in Egypt to Atlantis to Stonehenge to bird's nest soup to leaf-cutting ants in Brazil to American constitutional history to how the Trilateral Commission came into being and the cursed happening at Jekyll Island that produced the Federal Reserve Board. Occasionally we have the Mean Gene Review on the news of the night. If they say anything at all, we dignify them with a Mean Gene Review. It doesn't happen very often because they normally don't say anything. I hate bureaucrats and love God. Now, you don't have to clap. Occasionally, very seldom, occasionally, we carry on a continuous crusade to deliver this land from bureaucrats. Darwin sailed to a lonely island. He could have saved himself years of research. Had he lived today, any government office, he would have discovered the missing link. Bureaucrats. Now, if that offends government workers, you miss my point. You can be a government worker. You don't have to be a bureaucrat. For example, out here in Los Angeles, we have a man that got upset at people complaining about the postal system. So he wrote the editors a letter to the editors of the paper in which he gave the side of the postal workers. And he did a good job. I admire the man for speaking up. And he closed it by commenting that proof, I'm not saying it like he said it, but this is the gist of it, proof of how good they were is that they got the job done at all, as mismanaged as the postal system is. He got a disciplinary letter from his boss that'll be in his file forever and affect all of his promotions. He had violated the ethical code of the post office by making a statement detrimental to the image of the post office. He upped the image of the workers, exposed the asteroid orifices who run it. You will also learn to curse with elegant language. He exposed the bureaucrat. Now, the attitude of his boss is the embryo from which Nazism, worship of the state, grows. I mean, there may be light years distance between his boss and a full-fledged Nazi, but the fascistic worship of the state idea is an embryo form. Now, I distinguish between bureaucrats, and you always want to say Burek, which, you know, is on the edge of a puke. Burek. Burek rats. Burek rats. Now, you may say at this point, do you let anybody else talk on your show? No. This is a one-man crusade for sanity and intelligence. Burek rats. No, Burek rats. He emphasized the last syllable. You don't necessarily have to be a bureaucrat just because you work for government. You can be a Daniel. Daniel worked through four administrations in Babylon. He outlived four kings. Nehemiah was a worker in the court of the king. He didn't work for the government. Just be a Daniel. The word Daniel means judged of God, or God is judge. You see, Daniels recognize a higher power than their boss. Daniels recognized a certain inalienable rights, including the free speech rights of that employee. Daniels recognized what Jefferson and the founders of this country recognized. There are certain rights government can't give us and can't take it away. Daniels recognized this is a unique country, formed out of the frame of reference of the writings of Rutherford, who stunned the world by challenging the idea that the king is law, and instead proclaimed that the law is king. And out of the writings of John Locke, a social contract was formed that allowed a government to come into existence only if the governor and the governed lived under the higher law. It's a good day to be on this subject. One of the greatest friends the Constitution ever had, Sam Irvin, died today. Well, there's some of us that love it as much as he did. And this is one voice on television that believes you've removed that paper barrier between tyranny and freedom, and we're done in. So you'll get a few speeches on that subject. I'm trying to get Daniels in government, expose bureaucrats, and if you punch a hole in them in the right place, usually with sharp verbal words that hit their vanity, and the hot air comes out, they're reduced to size. Bureaucrats can't stand criticism. That's a mark of them. So we get on that subject occasionally. We teach on sex. I just dangle that one. There's some people that have watched for 10 years waiting for me to get on sex. Tonight, I'm going to teach you on the Bible. I'll teach you on the Bible. I want you to get ready. This is a teaching session. Now, if you don't have any brains, turn it off. By the way, I got to get back on the subject of demonology. I received a news clipping today. The Warrens are at it again. A farmer back in Connecticut. I meant to bring that news clipping tonight. We have so much territory to cover. But the subject I'm on tonight simply demonstrates and proves up a divine control over history. And we've got to do something about New York. And I'm just going to be into this, and they're going to leave. Just going to get started, and they're going to go. But here we go. I teach, when I get on the Bible, to just show off one thing. That God's not too worried about us asking a question that'll cause him to go into a blank. Now, I grew up in the church, and every time I'd ask one of those questions that were typical of me, the deacons would blanch, their wives would turn green, people would pray in the background, and someone would say, "Oh dear, you got to have faith." Well, thank God that he can survive a questioning brain. I want to show you something. I've been teaching to lay a background for going through Genesis. The first 11 chapters of Genesis are the ones that people read when they're going to read the Bible through in 82. The first day, get it behind them. They don't know why any of these things are said the way they're said. They just want to get behind them. For example, Genesis 1:1. Can we start there? Maybe you start somewhere else in your Bible. The Holy Bible. Let's start with chapter 1. Let's move on into it a bit. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, Bishop Lecture in the Middle Ages figured out he did that exactly 4004 B.C. at a certain hour of the morning. And people have gotten the idea, it's too cold in here, that to be a Christian, you've got to believe the earth's only 7,000 years old. Nowhere did God say. Moses didn't even say it. At 9 a.m., 4004 B.C., God created the heaven and the earth. I'm on page 1 if you've got a Bible like mine. It says, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, there's an interesting one. The King James people put it in the singular. I haven't dangled anything for a long time. You know what I'm going to teach on tonight? The lost tribes and the promises that we've been on. And I'm going to start, after I get there, in Jeremiah. But I figure Jeremiah needs an introduction. So we'll start at the beginning. Now it says, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. The word in the original is Elohim. It's plural. El is singular. Elohim is plural. What it should say is, in the beginning, gods. Oh, come on now. You're going to mess up my traditions. People listen to me the first time tonight, I got to say it. Look, I'm a you probably couldn't guess it right now, so I might as well tell you. I'm a historic churchman. 4 terms as the president of my denomination. Just voluntarily refused the 5th term. Pastor a church of congregational polity. 39 years old, I guess, right now. I'm in my 10th year. And I'm a historic churchman, not a nut. Did my doctoral dissertation on Reinhold Niebuhr's theology. But it's amazing how the church manages to matriculate its teaching through the Bible and miss the goodies. Go to Psalm 82. God stands. That's page 679 if you've got a Bible like mine. Now, you folks up there in Escanaba and Green Bay ought to have a Bible like mine. Where you been? Well, is it a special Bible? No. Plain old Nelson Bible, King James Version, but it's got wide margins. And that's what makes it nifty. You can write all these questions down and tell your kids to ask their Sunday school teacher. That'll tear them apart. Psalm 82. God, you got it? Page 679. God, singular, standeth in the congregation of the mighty. He judgeth among the gods. Well, now, wait a minute. I'm a Jew. I'm a monotheistic. This is the Old Testament, the Jewish Bible, isn't it? Huh? Psalms is pretty much heart and soul. He judges among the gods. And gods is in the plural here. Same word. Same word opens Genesis 1. What did they say there in the beginning? Gods. You're not supposed to ask questions like that. You get kicked out of churches for asking questions like that. Well, go get good and drunk and then call me tomorrow night and start listening to me. I'll sort you out. In the beginning, gods. Psalm 82 doesn't have any embarrassment about that one, you know. By the time they got that far, I guess, you know, they figured nobody would find it in this chapter. Get away with it here, but you don't dare start the Bible with a statement like that. I mean, it stands out there all by itself in the first line. It's liable to create the impression of polytheism. It's okay, you sneak it in on page 679, 680. They're not even going to be awake by the time they get to there. He judgeth among the gods. How long will ye judge unjustly and accept the persons of the wicked? Gods that are wicked. It's like my aunt said. God wants you to understand the Bible, why didn't write the damn thing that he could? Well, aunt swim. How long will ye judge unjustly and accept the persons of the wicked? Selah. Think of that. Gods that are wicked. Defend the poor and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and needy. Deliver the poor and needy. Rid them out of the hand of the wicked. They know not, neither will they understand. They walk on in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are out of course. I have said, ye are gods. And all of you are children of the Most High. But ye shall die like men and fall like one of the princes. Oh, well, then he was just calling them gods. They're men. That's not what it says. Gods that were going to die. Wicked gods and gods that were going to die. Were you ever going to explain that psalm? Yeah, put it on the dangle list. Just so you know, we got a few more things to get to. I only want to reference it in the context of, in the beginning, gods. Created the heaven and the earth. Well, I've never heard anything like that in my life. Okay. Then, say in the beginning, Elohim created the heaven and the earth. Put any meaning you want on Elohim. That's what most people do, theologically anyway. But if you're going to think, we got a problem to unravel. And thousands of people have read Genesis 1, never even paused with it. Genesis 2. And the earth was without form and void. That word was is a Hebrew word, just as legitimately translated, became. What was that? what are these strange sounds around me? Circle in that first verse God and write in the margin Elohim and put Psalm 82 in a question mark. We can't even get through the first verse without, what in the world are these sounds? Do you know what's going on around me tonight? Has somebody put little time bombs in the piano? You hear those? I mean, I must really be rattling the traditions. Even the piano is hollering. Circle that. I got about a week's teaching on just that first verse. But that's not the subject tonight. See, some people think you're supposed to park your brains at the door when you come to church. Because they don't want questions like this raised. And the earth was, circle that word was, just as legitimately translates, became. And the earth became. And without form and void is equally translatable, waste and desolation. The earth became a waste and a desolation. Darkness was on the face of the deep. Now, the cataclysmic theory postulates there's a vast gulf of time between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. I'm going to stop these strange sounds. In the beginning, gods, whomever or whatever, created the heavens and the earth. Nobody knows when. The precession of the equinoxes takes 26,000 years to unfold, between 25 and 28. Our earth goes around the sun, revolves on its axis, has an elliptical orbit, but at the same time, like a top that's slowing down in its spin, it wobbles. And if you were to run a line from the South Pole to the North Pole, the North Star, project that line like a run line out in space to the ceiling of the skies, the North Star now is Polaris. The North Star at another time is something else. About every 2,000 years, that revolving wobble of the Earth makes that extended rim line from the South Pole to the North Pole draw a little circle in the ball of the heavens. And every 2,000 years, the North Star is at a different place on that little circle. It takes about 25 to 28,000 years. In 2,000 increments to change the North Star around. Now, when we teach on the pyramid, you know, that God set all this in motion and waited 11,000 years to start a certain event in the heavens, make it all come out according to His set time. You want me to park my brains at the door of the church when I think about God, when His handiwork is written in the heavens, and Paul says we're without excuse because we can learn about Him up there? But you're not even supposed to read the astrology section of the paper. Demons leap out at you and bite your nose. Well, what do you think is going to happen to my nose? But I'm suggesting that it should read in the beginning, gods. Oh, that's awful. I warn you. In the beginning, gods created the heaven and the earth. Evolution doesn't bother me. I've already told you, I know where the missing link is. Evolution is no problem to me. You can find Man-like creatures, you know, they've quit a long time ago saying we sprung from monkeys. There's some common source they're looking for now for these various variety branches. I see the church tilting at windmills. Who cares about evolution? If it gives God's kicks, you know, eons of time, you need to have a little bit of fun. You watch the worms a while and then you say, let's put a shell on them. Then you say, how about a tail? Let's see how they act out of water 500,000 years later. I really don't care. Evolution's a theory. It's based upon a premise, primarily paleontology, but other factors too, that because certain things happen certain ways now, they always happen that way. And a mountain becomes a plain at a certain rate of time, and therefore, all things have always been as they are, and you project backwards. And because B follows A in a certain strata, therefore, A in some way or other was involved in a causal effect to produce B. No. There's just A and there's B, and we assume a cause. Evolution doesn't scare me. I grew up in a church frame where Antichrist was evolution. The church gets tilting at windmills. I've seen people get so excited, we must somehow stop evolution. I ain't got time. If we had quit being so scared of evolution, we could raise some questions that bother them a bit. If the law of evolution operates, what are we going to become? You know, I've never read a book on evolution that had the guts to sit down and project from past tendencies what might happen 200 million years hence. Because you know why? They're going to get to gods and angels and superhuman beings. And then their whole naturalism premise is shot, because evolution carried far enough is going to meet that fine line of differential between the supernatural and the natural. And supernatural simply means literally more natural. All they can do is theorize about the past. Well, if a car is going 100 miles an hour, it doesn't come to a dead stop. Inertia carries. Evolution's got lots of questions it needs to answer. Don't raise your kids in a frame that you make Bishop Usher God. He isn't even one of these gods. Because they're going to do what happened to me. They're going to find out either God played games and created this earth to create an impression of longevity in order to fool us into the opportunity of theorizing about vast eons of time, or they have existed a long time. Evolution's one theory to explain happenings over eons of time. It doesn't necessitate losing your faith in God. I don't care if man-like creatures evolve. My Bible says God created Adam. Breathed, that's too hot. God created Adam, breathed into him, and he became a living soul. Adam was a unique creation. Adam was a start over. You can have evolution produce man-like creatures all you want. You can have bones, you can have mineral elements, you can have anything that is common between man and any other being. Adam had a quality that doesn't fossilize. It'll never be discovered. It came from God. It's what made him different. And he was created after Genesis 1-2. Between Genesis 1-1 and 1-2 is a vast gulf of time. And Genesis 2 should read, the earth became a waste and a desolation. If you go to the prophecies of Ezekiel and Jeremiah and the passages that find Satan on this earth before there was any man, in Eden before he fell, you know that there was an earth inhabited by angelic beings, Elohim. And you know there was war in the heavens, and Jesus beheld Satan cast down, past tense. And some cataclysm shook this earth, and it became a waste and a desolation, and Genesis 1-2 forward is a recreative process. He creates anew many things. He tells the seeds, the herbs of the ground to spring forth, the only thing that could survive the cataclysm. And he never told Adam and Eve to replenish the earth. He told them to replenish it. Why are there two chapters on the creation of man? Did you know there were two? Why are there two chapters on the creation of man? Why didn't one do? Didn't that bother you? Well, we'll get to that too. Now, there are people that think that the mark placed on Cain, some very ignorant people, so let me deal with this racism instantly. There are idiots that have said the mark placed on Cain was to make him a black man. He died in the flood anyway. So there goes that theory. But there is much more evidence that the mark was to make him fair-skinned. In fact, there's a Baptist preacher here in Southern California, and he's a real scholar at a Bible college. He's written a whole book about that. Now, what's that do to your theories? Oh, endear me to my black brothers and sisters. You see, genetically, well, let me go on. Now, they lived a long time. I had to know when I was a kid, why do these people live so long? I mean, I started worrying when I was 7 years old about dying when I considered how long these people lived. It ain't fair. Do you know what I could do if I lived to be 987 years old? I'm 55 now, and I've got another 922 years to go. Do you realize what a terror I could become to my enemies? I believe I've gotten twice as smart the last year as I was the 54 years previous. There's a compounding Doppler effect if you keep studying. After a while, all this accumulated stuff, you start seeing the synthesizing elements. I can't imagine how smart I'd be if I had another 922 years. How come these people live so long? And what was that firmament? I mean, you know, it says, am I boring you?
No, sir.
You should just read these chapters hurriedly. Don't stop on them, because they'll just blow your mind. God said, well, let's read on. Second verse, put a circle around that was, and put became in its place. And the Spirit of God moved upon the faces of the water. Now, what's the distinction, you know? What part did the Spirit of God play in these Elohims? And does it say the Spirit of El or the Spirit of Elohim? God's. Huh? Well, we'll see, won't we? And God said, Now, does it say there, El said, or Elohim? Did God say or gods say? Let there be light. And there was light. That just blows living daylights out of my head. Because, verse 16, God made two great lights. The greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He didn't make the sun and the moon until the 16th verse. And yet, third verse, he said, let there be light. Where did it come from? And once he turned it loose, the fastest thing in the universe started moving. Now, there's no light in black holes, you know. Black holes are a discovery of modern science. No one's ever entered one and come back. It's very hard for us to conceive a black hole. Now, we know that there's such a thing as gravity. But it... You know, Einstein proved that light waves passing a body of matter that has gravity would bend. Gravity affects light. In a black hole, the light tries to get out, and the gravity is so strong, it comes back. Now, poor old Newton, he figured out an apple will fall and hit the ground. Light? You take this earth of ours and you condense it down, squeeze it until it's the size of a golf ball. You're not going to be able to get out of bed in the morning. You and your bed are going to look like pressed sheetrock. And this earth will then be known as a white dwarf. So dense, so massive, that the gravitational pull makes it, quote, the heaviest thing you ever saw. Just keep pressing. You see, a white dwarf will just about pull anything toward it. That's another thing we teach about the doggone people. The Dogon people in Central Africa that worship a white dwarf that wasn't discovered until the Middle Ages. Sirius B, a little star so small you can't see it without a telescope, a white dwarf that makes an orbit, elliptical orbit around the dog star and makes it wobble. And these Dogon people in Africa, their seasons, their religious liturgy, and everything's built around the worship of that star they can't see. And they worship a third one that we haven't found yet. How do they know that? I've got to get back to them Dogon people, don't I? Just remembering some of the things that are dangling. I mean, I don't want any more stations to join us. I've waited as long as I can wait to get going. Now, white dwarf, let's take this white dwarf and squeeze it some more. Until, if you can abstract this, it becomes nothing.
This is the end of side one.